Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, all of the earnings. Every company that we talk about on this show earns so much money, they could buy many, many countries and islands. It's kind of absurd. But we'll get into Samsung, we'll get into Qualcomm, into Alphabet, and maybe even Sony, because they sold a few phones and a lot of PlayStations. We'll talk about Google I.O. That's coming up in under 3 weeks. It's going to be a big deal. Amazon launched some tablets. Samsung launched some laptops. And we'll get into a couple of smartphones, Chromebook. We'll talk about a whole bunch of stuff. We got a big show. It's a sad show. We'll talk about why. But I want to introduce our guests. Jerry Hillenbrand, what's going on?
I am doing pretty good, except you tried to ruin it. So
I do that.
I know.
That's my job on this show. I try to ruin it, and then you're supposed to build it back up. So
okay. Party for everyone.
A big job ahead of you. Ara Wagner, what's going on?
It's going to be a good weekend. Free comic book day is tomorrow. What?
Ooh. Like in store?
Yeah.
They're doing it in store again?
Yeah.
Ah, fun. That other ebullient voice you hear is Russell Holly.
Hello.
Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. This is going to be a good day.
Yes, I hope so. The sun just came out, actually, as you said that. As you said that, I now believe in God. And Hayato Huseman, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, I am tired. Very, very tired.
So I don't know. We shouldn't bury the lead here, because I don't think we should do the whole podcast and then do some like big announcement at the end. Today is your last day, Hayato. You are moving on. Maybe we can talk about what you're going to do at the end. And Russell, it is also your last day here at Future, Mona, Android Central, whatever. And we'll talk about what you're doing. I guess people already know because you've had it on your Twitter bio for like 3 days now. we'll talk about the specifics in a sec. But I wanted to have you guys on, you know, just one last hurrah, I guess.
Yeah.
How are you guys feeling overall?
It's been a busy week. Been mostly packing my entire life up to move later today, actually. So we've got most of our life in a U-Haul right now, sitting out in front of our house.
So how are you podcasting
from the U-Haul?
My apologies to Jim, because I'm sitting in a very empty, echoey room with a little USB mic in front of some curtains that we've left up, just doing whatever I can to minimize the bounce, but it's not working out too well.
I was just getting ready to ask if you had lowered yourself to a lesser mic than what you're used to.
It's still not bad. It's the Shure MV5C that I just reviewed that actually went live today. It's a pretty good little mic. It's just not as good as the MV7 I'm used to.
Well, I mean, this, you know, demonstration of it makes it sound pretty shitty, Hayato. I'm just going to tell you.
Blame the room, not the mic.
Is it like Anthony Hopkins level anticlimactic that your last post on the site is going to be a microphone review?
Oh, I know.
It's weird. I don't know how to feel about that.
Well, with any luck, we'll have one more thing going up, but TBD.
Yeah, right.
Doing nothing the rest of the day. Come on.
Yeah, Russell, how are you? We haven't really spoken to you in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I'm on the other side of a big move than Hayato, and then I've finally got most of my things unpacked. But
congrats.
Yeah, thanks. It's been weird. This is an odd month. There's just a ton of change all over the place. Mm-hmm. But otherwise I feel pretty good.
Yeah. You just reviewed a really cool Bowflex bike for us today as your last article for AC, which is cool. I mean, aside from the R2-D2 projector, which
that was super dope. I was really happy with that.
I really enjoyed that.
I have to admit, I thought that was R2-D2 beer when you posted the picture in Slack, and I was going to
say, that would also be very cool.
No, I would put it past Disney to license it.
These traumatic flashbacks to like the old Motorola Android days.
Oh, no.
Because the software on this was like they tried really hard to cover up all of the Android stuff with their own thing. And it just failed in a whole bunch of places where it was just unnecessary. And it made me very sad because it could have been a really cool experience. But they tried so hard to cover up all of the Android stuff that was underlying it that that it gave me violent flashbacks to some of the early Motorola phones.
Yeah, Hayato just reviewed the Atrix after 10 years. And
yep. I did.
Couldn't get past, like, what it lasted, what, a minute before it shuts itself off?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all have that problem every so often, but...
And you didn't even hit me on Slack and ask me how to root the damn thing.
Oh, I tried. I mean, I rooted it. I flashed some ROMs from XDA, and it just... I think I got a lemon. I think it's like a battery issue, maybe. I don't know. It just kept on rebooting.
Oh, I thought it was the Moto Blur login that killed you.
Well, that was also part of it, but even with it disabled in custom ROMs, it was still just shutting off, so...
You
it
should
is
get
what
your
it is.
$4 back from eBay.
Also, I want to apologize really quickly to Shore because I'm realizing I'm an asshole. I've been recording with the inline mic built into these earbuds I'm recording with, not
Fantastic.
The Shore input settings.
Whatever, it's fine. It's your last show. There's no expectations here.
You should probably find a good technology website to learn how to use your stuff, man.
You would think.
Yeah, I bet Android Authority has a how-to on how to do that.
Mm.
Yahoo.
Yahoo Answers.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Man. Okay. So should we talk about I.O.? So the schedule went live for I.O. yesterday as we're recording this, which is Friday. And I mean, there's the obvious ones, right? The keynote on Monday, which is Monday the 18th of May. It'll be a...
Tuesday.
Oh, is it Tuesday? Sorry,
the
Tuesday.
The first day of I.O. is a Tuesday.
You're right.
Sorry.
My bad. And there's the keynote. It'll be kind of what we think of as a traditional Google I.O. keynote. Sundar Pichai comes on. He talks about all the amazing things Google's done. He touts the environmental investment the company's made. It's basically an Apple keynote right up until it's very much not. And then they get into the nitty-gritty. And I'm expecting, well, Pichai actually said in the investor call this week that we should expect significant announcements from like a software perspective. So we're not expecting hardware, but there's going to be some, I think, significant product announcements from the Google Assistant side, from Wear OS in particular. I would expect them to, you know, we've talked about the Pixel Watch a lot over the last few months. If they are going to launch a Pixel Watch in the fall, which we are expecting them to do, they have to get the groundwork laid for this overhaul. And we've seen a bunch of these sessions already been announced.
That's just a mountain of work to fix Wear OS and release a watch. I feel bad for the people that have to work on that project.
Yeah, but they've had 4 years of not really doing a whole
they
lot.
They didn't bother to start until next
month.
They've
had much longer than 4 years. They've had 6 years to get their act together when it comes to Wear OS. The fact that it's taken this long to really try and get, like, okay, we understand that the hardware has gotten to where we want it to be between the 3100 and the 4100. We need the software to actually work in order for the hardware to actually do its job of making these watches run properly. You can do as much as you want on hardware, but until the software catches up, it is a moot point.
He should just walk up to every single person on the team, give them an Apple Watch, and say, here, make this better, and walk away. That's what Google's facing here. They've been squeezed out of the very low end. They never had any presence in the high end, so they need to make something that works really good and doesn't cost $500.
Yeah, I mean... That won't be what happened.
But
it's definitely worth keeping in mind. Like, Wear OS will have a bigger part to play this year than previously.
Thank goodness.
Obviously, there's the what's new in Android, which is it's usually sort of a fireside-like, panel where the heads of the Android development team, led by Chet Haas, will talk about the high-level stuff that's coming to Android 12. They're going to release the first beta on May 18th, which is great. We kind of know that for a fact. And along with that, we're going to see, I think, the big visual changes that Google is willing to invest in for Android 12. Until now, they've been relatively minor. We'll also talk about Android TV, Android for cars. There's some stuff around foldables as well, which will be interesting. And then there are going to be some changes to Google Play. And then there's a big one on privacy, which is important. A big part of Android 12 is improvements to the privacy protocols. And then what we're seeing, they're laying the groundwork already in Google, in Android 12, is this Material Next, which we've talked about. Seems like a natural evolution of what Material Design is. Big, chunky, panels and more obvious touch points. They're just leaning a little bit away from the minimalism of Material. They're kind of, instead of it being so flat, they're not adding shadows to it, but they're sort of adding effects around the panels and the touch points. And I think that's interesting.
I'm also very excited about them trying to tie color into more things as far as the Android system goes.
Right.
Like I really want to see the color theming that we saw leaked back around right before developer preview 1. I still want to see that. And I want to see the integration we can get there, because that can really help Android feel a little bit fresher and help it feel a little bit more dynamic, especially if it's going to pull from the wallpaper. But at the same time, if we haven't even seen those things, like right now, you have to dig through, you have to do ADB commands, and then you have to dig in order to turn these things on. So I'm starting to lose hope that that's actually going to be coming this year, and that they're going to hold that for Android 13 next year.
I think that's what we're going to see when they release a new Pixel.
Yeah.
They have to have something for the software. They do that every year. Some years they have a 0.1 release, and other years they just throw new features in. I think this year the big visual changes will come with the new Pixel. And then they'll filter out to every other Pixel, but
I mean, that doesn't sound so bad. It's interesting that, we don't really associate the Pixels anymore with like visual changes. I mean, most of the Pixels themselves have looked the same, but also the software that hits the Pixels is pretty unchanged from what Google unveils. The last time they did a 0.1 was Android
the first Pixel, I think.
7?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
7,
we don't
7
we don't really
7,
do
1.
0.1s anymore. The only one that does a 0.1, I think, in recent memory has been One UI.
They don't count.
Well, they don't.
Google has tried in a ton of different ways to make sure that the Pixel was in some way kind of uniquely different for a while now, and none of them have really stuck. The AR stickers thing was cute, but it didn't really land. Some of the unique kind of wallpaper stuff that it was doing a couple generations ago, again, wasn't really
They're still
enough.
Doing unique wallpapers, but that's a wallpaper isn't going to make you want to buy a phone.
Well, right.
But even then,
it's not enough for someone to say, it's not even enough for someone to say, man, I wish I had that feature more than for like a passing moment. And that, I think that's kind of the point. And so Google has tried this, these subtle pushes. It really wouldn't surprise me if this year we start seeing more dramatic pushes, especially with, some of the, what's the nice way to put this? Some of the kind of continuing conversation around, Google made chipsets. We're crossing that divide. Like there's been an ongoing conversation for Jerry, maybe it's been 5 years,
about
where,
that.
What's going to happen to Google's hardware partners if Google, makes a phone that is appreciably better than all of the other ones. And has kind of unique features that don't get shared out to everyone. Once Google makes that change from a hardware perspective, it doesn't really matter what goes on in software. That's going to be kind of the key differentiator. So software is kind of the, any like major software differentiation, this is the generation to do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Google's always said there's a firewall between the hardware and the software teams. And there have been, I look at something like call screen as one of those Pixel features that when I don't have it, I miss it.
No doubt. I would kill for that on this Galaxy S21.
Every time I switch away from the Pixel, it's like I feel like I get a lot more spam calls and I get a lot more spam texts. Mm-hmm. And it's, man, I just love the Pixel 5.
Yep. If I don't show my support to Donald Trump now, he's not going to talk to me anymore.
Remember that guy?
Hopefully not. So I think what's interesting as well is with more evidence being shown that Google will talk about its own silicon, will they mention anything like that at Google I.O. or will they save the GS101 announcement for the Pixel? I feel like it's going to happen in October, but would they, like with the Wear OS stuff, are they going to lay any groundwork to allow developers to optimize for this chipset at all?
See, that whole thing is weird. I don't see Google making a chip without also making its own hardware to go inside a Pixel Watch or, you know, a Google Home product. That's just natural. Guys, if you were expecting Google to make the new Qualcomm 888, I'm sorry. Google's chip is going to be very low-end and very optimized to do the certain specific things Google wants it to do on a phone. And that means
low-end. I don't think mid-range.
I think it's going to be mid-range.
People that want the 888 are going to call it low-end. They call the 765 low-end.
Yeah.
Which is dumb, but that's how it is. But it would be crazy for Google to take and design their own cores in their own way to lay it out and not scale that down for the Watch or a Nest Mini or anything. All these products have microprocessors inside.
Well, sure. So I also think, more to Jerry's point, like when we see kind of developer optimization points, I also feel like it's going to lean more towards some of the co-processing stuff. 2 years ago, there was a push from inside Google, this kind of like hushed behind the scenes thing for Google's participation in a world where we had digital licenses and you know, kind of like authentication, like government authentication points on our phones and what that would look like. And Google released a set of guidelines for that. I think it was a month ago now, where, you know, the point there was like this kind of set of tools for developers to use in order to have these kind of virtualized authentication tokens that happened on your phone. Like in keeping with the direction Google's been going there, you know, there now needs to be a hardware point for that. Like the software was what was talked about in that release. Having a way for someone to actually carry a driver's license on your phone and being able to explain how it's safe, and being able to give developers for like state and local governments the tools to do those things is going to be a conversation that is going to happen in a place like I.O.
The problem there, this is a bigger problem. None of that matters. It won't matter until Samsung puts hardware in their phones. Developers just don't care because Google's only going to sell a million pixels.
Well, so here's the thing, Jerry. I think if we were talking about a normal set of features, then you're probably right. I think when it comes to virtualized authentication stuff, it's a little different because there have already been a lot of, especially here in the U.S., kind of state and local governments who have been pushing for it. Like Louisiana already has a virtual driver's license. It's awful. It's basically an app that pulls up a picture of your driver's license. And if your phone is off or your battery dies, you're boned. Like there's no way to access it. But it does exist. And there's been, you know, especially with the push here in the US, the delay for the Real ID system got pushed back a year because of COVID. Being able to do all of that virtually would be a huge thing. So even if Google were to say, hey, here's the tools to do this, by the way, it only works on the Pixel for right now, that is enough for state and local governments to start development contracts that are like 2 and 3 years long. Because it's not a let's turn around in 6 months thing when it comes to a state government. It's a multi-year project. So like Samsung will have caught up in that time. But in the meantime, you know, you're starting to look at local state governments, probably like California, New York, and Maryland and places like that first. We'll look for kind of ways to deploy it. And by the time they actually have it ready, Samsung will be ready.
I hope so. I mean, not that I'm going to do it. Hell, that scares the hell out of me.
There's a lot of stuff that's kind of scary about it. One of the things that Google brought up as part of its policy for this is making it so that your driver's license can still be accessed even though your phone is off. Sounds like a great idea, like, oh man, my battery died, but if you tap this NFC tag on the back of my phone, you can still access the thing. But if we've learned anything over the last couple of years is that if the wrong police officer stops you somewhere, being able to access your personal information without your permission is not like a great thing. So there's a lot of conversations that still need to be had about how this technology gets used. And that's why I said a place like IO is probably the best place for it, because there are people who can have those conversations in as close to a face-to-face manner as possible. And we'll hopefully be able to bring up these scenarios that the folks at Google may not have thought of.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because you know, Google uses IO to talk about Android, right? Big picture, this is what is being added to Android. And it shies away from saying that these X features will be Pixel exclusive. Mm-hmm. And they are Pixel exclusive often for a while, for 6 to 12 months or whatever, sometimes indefinitely. But largely, these are like big picture improvements to the ecosystem. And more Android conversations are mirrored by what they're talking about with Google Assistant and the overall AI structure of how Google Assistant is integrated into every feature or every product that Google makes. And increasingly, it's just like it's almost like the foundation of many of the services, especially around the smart displays and around anything audio related. So it is interesting that when you talk about something like authentication, we normally think about it as this is a thing that exists on the phone, and it's local. It's very, it's very micro. Whereas you're talking about Google and Apple too cooperating on like a very macro policy level to try to get these things. Sort of like what happened with the COVID-19 exposure notification system, and that wasn't successful really, but it happened and it was rolled out, and it may have helped a few people. So yeah, it's kind of cool actually. I mean, the more government scrutiny Google has against it, the more these conversations about what features it's bringing into Android have to be put in the context of like, will the government care about this? Will the feds crack down on this? Will this be considered anti-competitive? It's like a super interesting time for Apple and Google to be holding developer conferences.
Yep.
All right, let's just run through some of these product announcements so we can kind of get them out of the way. So this week, Samsung had an Unpacked event. It was not at all Android-based, but they called it the most powerful Galaxy ever. There were two laptops, or four if you consider the sizes, the Galaxy Book Pro and the Book Pro 360. They're fine. I mean, they're nice looking. They're light. One of them has an AMOLED display. The other has a Super AMOLED display, which is basically just like they're using the same nomenclature as they do for phones. But they are very nice OLED screens. I don't know how bright they get, but that might be a concern. What's the most interesting for me as a super charging nerd is that this is the first computer that I know of that ships with a GaN charger. So it's a 65 watt GaN charger, which is the size of, like, if you've ever seen one of those Anker chargers that you can buy off Amazon, they're about half the size of a regular 65 watt charger. And I'm just super excited for companies like Samsung to start mass producing these and hopefully offering them to phone users who still want to actually charge their phone wired, using wires. And I don't know, I think this is a really nice little perk of buying one of these computers.
Yeah, but Samsung's not going to put a charger in the box with a phone. We already know that.
I know. But that's the thing, is that if they're offering, it might be a generational thing, right? Eventually, if they're trying to push wire, if they're trying to push charging to a new level, they might say, okay, this year we're giving everybody 65 watt GaN chargers because we want to set the baseline again.
That would be sweet. I mean, or a coupon, you get it free from the Samsung store when you buy a phone.
Yeah.
That way they can still have the little boxes and save room in the truck.
That's probably the most likely.
I just love that this is finally happening. They're finally mainstreaming GaN.
Yep.
It's taken years, it feels like. So
yeah, it's good stuff.
It's a scary, like, you have to understand that after, like, multiple years of, like, what were basically scare stories about USB Type-C, like, having problems, I really am happier that they took the slow and steady approach to this. Because the alternative could have been really bad. And I feel like we've reached a point now where it's much harder to buy, you know, cheap USB-C cables that'll light your house on fire than it was, you know, even a year ago. So, like, I'm happier with that delay. As much as, like, the geek in me wanted every single thing to be running on this, I'm glad that they took it slow in order to avoid some of that.
Yeah, I used to preach how terrible it was to have phones that charge at such high wattage, because that means when you go to the gas station and buy that cable to put between your charger and your phone, you're going to burn your shit to the ground. And I'm glad that that's much harder to do now. So, and GaN helps too. I've got a 100-watt GaN charger here, and I've loaded it up, and it doesn't get hot. It doesn't get the cable hot. It doesn't get
as hot. Yeah. GaN chargers can still get plenty warm.
Warm enough that you can still touch it. I call hot as, you know, 90°C, where you don't want to put your hand on it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've tested a number of GaN chargers because I've had to write those collections, and I'm happy to see it coming to more OEM chargers, like in-box chargers. I'm just stunned that it's taken so long for OEMs to at least even offer a GaN charger.
It's right. Expensive.
It is. It's a bit more expensive, which is why it's debuting on a laptop that costs $1,000, but still.
That no one's going to buy.
It's not that expensive. You can get a 100-watt GaN charger from Aki for like $50 or $40.
But
it's not that much more expensive.
But Aki's only making $8 on that charger instead of $20 on the other chargers that aren't GaN. So it's expensive in that sense.
Also, companies, you know, as we mentioned, they gave away these chargers for free, or they built them into the price of the product traditionally. So if we start separating the price of the charger from the product, it will make it more likely companies will adopt GaN, because they can just charge you. Like OnePlus charges $50 for its 65-watt PPS charger. And it's a great universal charger that you should buy for any phone that supports it, including non-OnePlus devices. But OnePlus, when they sell their wireless charger that requires a 65-watt wall plug, they don't include the plug in the box. They want you to buy it separately, which is an extra. Either they assume you have the OnePlus 9 Pro, or you will buy it separately, which adds $50. But they're forcing the customer into that position, which is, in my opinion, a good thing, because then you get to you don't have to get an extra charger every time you want one.
And it's not all one assembly.
Oh my God, that first wireless charger was...
That's how they had to do it, unless they wanted to force you to use their specific charger.
Yeah,
I don't fault them for that. That was safe.
All right, let's talk quickly about this Galaxy A52 5G. So you reviewed it this week. Tell us a little bit about your experience.
It's actually a pretty decent phone. I'm going to keep using it for the next week or so before I have to go back to the Pixel 4a ahead of IO. It's actually been pretty decent, except for two things that I've had with it. The first being that the display washes out much more quickly when I'm outside than I would have expected from a $500 Samsung phone. Like, when I took it to Epcot to get review photos, I brought the Pixel 4a with me, and I held the Galaxy A52 and the Pixel 4a next to each other. And the Pixel 4a screen was noticeably brighter and easier to read in direct sunlight, and even in the shade. Like, I had to wait for the sun to get lower in the sky before I could actually photograph the screen of this phone outside.
That's not surprising, given that it's 120 hertz. They're probably saving.
Oh no, I turned off 120 hertz after the first like 10 minutes outside because I was like, okay, is this like messing with the frame rate or something? Is that messing with how it looks on the camera? No, it was, no, the screen brightness just wasn't getting up where I wanted to be. And to Samsung's credit, they sent me a second one. It is sitting in my dining room right now. I'm going to set it up and take it with me to the park on Sunday to see whether or not my unit just had a dud screen. But
I
so
doubt
long
it.
As I'm not, yeah, I'm not terribly hopeful, but so long as you are not out in the sun every, like, all afternoon, every single day, chances are this phone is probably pretty good for you, especially with the way that carriers are going to subsidize it. I mean, performance has been fine on it. It does have a little bit more. You'll notice when you're switching between apps a little bit more. But for quote-unquote regular people, this phone will be absolutely fine, especially for $150 the way that AT&T is selling it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, eventually you'll be able to find this phone for like $350, $400, which will be a great deal.
Well, I mean, it's $5 a month on AT&T right now for 30 months. That makes it $150, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why it's a great phone, because of the price tag attached to it through your carrier.
Yeah. I'm not as thrilled that the bands that you get vary by which carrier you buy the phone through, which is why I'm going to recommend that if you're buying this phone, buy Unlocked. That way you get all of the bands. But because I think they sent me a T-Mobile review unit and I have AT&T, so I didn't have as great of a 5G reception on here. LTE was still fine and I got decent speeds, but I didn't see that 5G symbol in my status bar nearly as much as I saw LTE.
Yeah, that'll take a couple of years to get sorted.
Especially since this is only sub six. There's no millimeter wave here, which is a slight bummer to some people, but I understand why Samsung didn't include
it. But the Verizon version has it.
Verizon isn't carrying this one. Verizon is carrying the 8. Not at all. I don't think they wanted the A42 instead because the A42 had millimeter wave. But the A42 is also a lesser model.
That's dumb.
Yeah, the lineup this year is ridiculous to keep track of. We're actually getting Harish. I'm getting Harish to write a buyer's guide for the Galaxy A series this year because it's just so confusing.
There's a lot to keep up with.
I'm just curious if the A52 on T-Mobile has mid-band support, because my S21 does, and it is freaking screaming fast. I love it.
It looks like it has some mid-band support. I think it supports N41 and N71 bands, which are... Is that technically mid-band?
I don't know. I have to look it up.
Yeah.
I used to know these by heart, and I don't anymore. I'm ashamed.
I haven't had to dig as wholeheartedly into 5G as like Sam Contreras has, and I'm very thankful for him because he decodes all of this nonsense for the rest of us. But I wish that I could have seen more 5G coverage out of this. I just can't tell whether or not that's just that I'm on AT&T and this is a T-Mobile model, or if it's just or it could just be that sub six coverage just isn't that great in Orlando yet. I mean, I would have thought that AT&T would upgrade the cellular network around Walt Disney World, but hey, I could be wrong.
Yeah, it looks like N41 is T-Mobile 2.5 gigahertz.
Yeah, T-Mobile Sprint. That's the mid-band spectrum they bought from Sprint.
Dude, it is fast.
Of course it is.
I'm getting 900 megabits download here at my house. And I live in the middle of freaking nowhere.
I never got anything close to that.
I mean,
I'm jealous.
I can't do anything with it. What do you do on a phone with that kind of bandwidth?
I know what I would do with it if I was at Disney, but also I never got anything above 30 megabit per second whenever I would run my speed tests. Yeah.
I live just, you know, where they test network speeds, because if it doesn't, the test is poor, there's only three people that are going to complain.
Yeah. Well,
Russell
I mean, you're lucky.
Russell's been out here. He knows it's trees.
Trees and rocks.
My neighbors are trees and rocks. Best neighbors you could have.
Yeah, they don't complain.
Well, after about 40 beers, they can complain.
Unless you chop them down, I guess. Let's talk about these new Amazon tablets. I don't know. Interesting to me, they're not the fact that these are not, they're not interesting in and of itself. They are interesting in that they're kind of doing the Samsung thing of just making a tablet for every possible demographic. So there are new Fire HD 10, 10 Plus, and then there's a productivity version that comes with a bundled Bluetooth keyboard and 12 months of Microsoft 365. Now those apps, the 365 apps, are preloaded. Another partnership that Microsoft has made with an Android software producer after Samsung. So now we have Microsoft apps preloaded on Amazon tablets and Samsung phones and tablets. And they're directly competing with Google's Workspace, Google Docs, Google Sheets, etc. Really smart of Microsoft to get into that game. Obviously, Samsung has a choice. It has to bundle Google services too, but Amazon doesn't have any Google services. So the next best option was Microsoft. There's now a new version of the Fire Kids. It's the Fire HD 10 Kids and Kids Pro. This is fascinating to me. So Amazon is now segmenting their kids' tablets between 3 to 6 year olds and then 6 to 12 years old. And these new ones are aimed at 6 to 12 year olds. And they provide, instead of a much more lockdown curated experience, they're basically putting the onus on the parents. So they're saying, we're setting this up in some sort of a walled garden, but you have an open browser with some filters turned on by default. You can access the regular Amazon App Store, but there are some filters on by default. And the actual tablet is less bulky. It's got a much lower kind of, it's just a thinner, less rugged bezel around the display, because presumably 6 to 12 year olds are going to treat a little bit better, but it's still there. I don't know. I find this to be a smart strategy. They're the same price, etc. But Amazon just clearly has particular demographics in mind. And to be honest, I understand after a year of lockdown, a lot of these parents are just going to say, here's a freaking tablet, go do whatever for the whole day.
Well, especially at the prices that Amazon has put these out at, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's been the thing with the Fire Kids tablets, is there's so many people who say, hey, if you want like a good tablet, get your kid, you know, like the iPad mini, but the iPad mini starts at $350, and the comparable Amazon tablet for any of these age ranges is $100. You know, if you get the 10-inch one, then you can get the one for $200. But I mean, there's just no math there. There are very few people who are going to intentionally spend $250 more for what is essentially a Netflix machine.
Yeah, yep, absolutely.
If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber and have kids, you really should get them a Fire Kids tablet. It's great. And that's coming from somebody who thinks tablets are dumb and who thinks that Fire tablets are even worse.
Well, for your kids, there's also just basically nobody else has the same warranty, because Amazon has that 2-year worry-free warranty. Yeah. Like, your kid straight up wrecks this tablet, Amazon will give you a new one.
That is a really good perk.
Especially since a lot of these tablets will die of old age in 2 years before they die of a kid dropping them down a flight of stairs. Like,
yeah.
Same.
What really... What really gets me about this is they released their, what do they call it, the Pro or the Plus or something with the keyboard and everything.
Yeah.
And it's only $200 or $225 or something like that. That's smart. That's going to get people to spend that extra $25, you know, even if they don't need it, just because, well, for $25, I can get this cool keyboard just in case.
It's cool, but it's also a constant reminder that you should like your eyeballs more than most people do.
Yeah.
Like, these are still like 1080p screens. And if you have like the fact that they released these Microsoft apps to it and gave you this little Bluetooth keyboard, like I hope that anyone who actually decides to use this thing for work likes their eyeballs better than that, because that's not a long-term solution for not needing a vision appointment.
I don't see this being a, like, anybody's primary work thing. It's I have a desktop at home. I just want something that I can check emails on the go, and I can hand it off to my kid to watch Disney Plus while we're on our way to grandma's or whatnot.
Honestly, I just really like that when you dock it, it turns into basically like an Echo Show. Like I think that's a really just, it's a cool way to like kind of kill like two birds with one stone. You don't have to buy multiple products to if you just want a screen for your kitchen or something, you can just kind of.
Didn't Lenovo do that?
Yeah, Lenovo's done that for 3 years.
It wasn't great there either, but.
No.
But I mean, Amazon is closer to the software layer to do this slightly better. So it's, It is more likely to be a usable experience when Amazon is driving than Lenovo in this situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Google has tried to make this a thing that more devices can do. And I mean, when you do it on a Chromebook, it's actually not half bad. As just like, because that's what I did with my Chromebox when I was reviewing it. I just set it to where it doesn't turn off during, it doesn't turn off overnight. It just clicks over to the overview mode with the photo gallery, the time, and the weather.
I would say at least on the tablet side of things, Amazon's a lot more invested on big screens than Google is at this point.
Oh, yeah.
The tablets are the next thing Google needs to fix after they give up on Android Wear.
Yeah. you think they're going back to... You're going to beat that drum again? I don't know.
No, they need to, but they won't.
Just put RTOS on everything.
They need to improve the large screen Android experience, not just for tablets, but they really need to do it for Chromebooks. Like, if Chromebooks are going to be the mainstream success that they want to be and that they're starting to be, the app experience needs to not be this hodgepodge between, okay, I have a phone screen app for some of my things, I have a tablet screen app for some of my things, and I have full screen apps for other things.
I hope we get out of this whole phase of like, I guess it's like a transitionary phase of, you know, you can use phone apps on computers now. They all kind of suck, but you can do it. And it's like, I love the idea. The implementation needs a lot of work.
It's a Band-Aid solution, and I really hate it.
But that's the thing.
It's like an old Band-Aid. Like, you reach into the box, and it's the Band-Aid at the very bottom that
doesn't
like
stick
anymore.
It was
gone a while ago, and just covered in hair. Yeah.
But if Google won't fix that experience on a Chromebook, and Google loves Chrome, Google sinks money into Chrome, they gave up on tablets. What makes anybody think they're ever going to fix it on tablets?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, to be fair, it's not just Google either. I mean, I just had an M1 MacBook Air for the last week, and I was using some iPhone apps on that. It's cool that you can. It still sucks on a Mac just as bad as it does on a Chromebook. Yeah.
So using the keyboard to play Candy Crush isn't good, is what you're telling me.
It's not ideal.
I was about to say, how many of those apps just suck because you can't just use a touchscreen on them?
Like, no touchscreen, no resizing. There's a lot that's wrong with it.
Yeah. Well,
but that's a problem. That's a universal problem.
Yeah.
I believe Apple will fix it before Google will, because Apple is more, they care about the visual.
Sure.
You've been able to resize Android apps on Chromebooks forever. It doesn't change anything.
You can't always do it.
Apps have been around for a while, too.
It's something that developers have to enable. And I know this because Microsoft took it away on my Solitaire app. And now it only does full screen if I go into tablet mode. I'm so pissed.
Even if you can resize them, it doesn't always work very well.
Yeah.
It requires too much developer input. See, I see Apple saying, look, your app's going to work good on our MacBook Air, or we're going to yank it out of the store. And that'll work. Google will never do that.
Yeah.
What's really interesting, I mean, we're talking about Android on tablets and how Amazon has just a better focus, which is true. But if you look at something like Android Auto, or what Google's doing with Android Automotive, which is the native built-in version that'll debut in cars this year, next year.
It's already debuted. It's available on a car that's available for purchase right now.
Well, the Polestar 2.
It's like a $300,000 car, but still.
It's not a $300,000 car.
I don't see the problem there.
It's not a widely available one.
Is MKBHD buying you one of those, Hayato? If not, then it's still a problem. Now you just shut up. God, I'm going to miss telling you to shut up.
You spoiled the whole damn show, Jerry. Thanks a lot.
I thought you already said...
Well, I guess we know now, don't we?
Cat's out of the bag.
Cat's out of the bag.
Well,
he's taking over as the host of MKBHD.
I need to start paying attention to what you all say.
We'll come back to that in a second. Everybody can just stop vibrating with excitement now. I mean, what I think is really interesting is if you look at like Android Automotive, it is that sort of lean back ambient mode that you would expect to see on something like when you dock a Lenovo tablet into a charger and it becomes kind of a Google Assistant style experience. But it's a very different experience. And it feels like those teams just aren't talking to each other. There's no there's no unified vision around what is lean back Android. There's lean back Android on Android TV, on ambient mode, on smart displays, and Android Auto. And they're very different aesthetics. And I'm not saying they need to perform the same, obviously, but there's no visual unity there. There just doesn't seem to be any desire for Google to unify those teams and make them something coherent. And until that happens, I don't think Android on big displays, right? If you think about like the cars of the future, the crazy demos that I saw of the Mercedes, what was it, the EQS, the all-electric S-Class Mercedes that got previewed a few weeks back. It's got this massive like three display panel all across the front of the car. It's the whole thing is just one big touchscreen.
God, that's going to get people killed.
It's crazy.
I hate Android Auto. I don't want to see Android Auto until it can disable the touchscreen on your phone or your head unit.
My
girlfriend was killed by somebody playing with a radio.
Oh, Jesus.
While they were driving. So if you touch your phone or your infotainment or whatever it is while you're driving, you are a bad person. And Google enables you. Google is bad people.
Google has a hard limit to the number of times you can tap something or the number of times you can scroll while your car is in
motion. One time is too much.
It is. Especially when Google Assistant commands have gotten to the point where you can navigate by voice, and Google Assistant commands will recognize most things, most not being all. I just hate how one of the few points of lag for me has been using Android Auto on the A52 with my car, because normally on the S21 or my Pixel 4a, it's like a half second to maybe a second delay between me pressing the button and being able to give a command. On the A52, it's like 3 to 4 seconds, which is not great.
Yeah, look, I totally understand that, but that is happening, right? Cars are going to be screened.
Yep.
They're already computers. They're going to be all screen at some point. I mean, you can see what it looks like on any electric vehicle today, right?
Yep.
So it's just a necessary evil that we're going to have to deal with. But Android Auto,
self-driving cars.
Well, that, yeah,
all
eventually
those big screens are going to be fine as soon as the car can drive itself.
When's that going to happen?
Probably around 2030.
I believe it could happen in Virginia right now. I think Virginia is one of the states that just said, yeah, we looked at the, you know, the incident records and that kind of stuff, and sure, do it. And there's a couple other states that have approved. But, you know, a company like Tesla or whatever Google's partner of the day is, they're not going to make a completely self-driving car and release it to everyone until you can drive it everywhere in North America.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk some earnings and then finish up with just a couple more gadgets. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Indeed. AI can do some incredible things, but for most jobs in your company, you need a good old-fashioned carbon-based life form, preferably a brilliant one, preferably as soon as possible. If you're looking for great minds that move the world, you can hire them with Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in the Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description immediately. And Indeed skills tests that on average reduces hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests, then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for the applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. So if you're hiring, you absolutely need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/ACP. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/ACP. Indeed.com/ACP, offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. All right. Let's go quickly through these. So as I said at the beginning, most companies that we talk about regularly on the show had pretty good quarters in spite of real challenges to acquiring and distributing silicon. So Samsung said that it had softness in its semiconductor division because of a part shortage. They couldn't push out as many chips at its Austin fab, but overall the S21 sold much better than the S20 series, and they're seeing some really good forecasting for the A52 and A72, which is not surprising. Samsung did a really good job with its devices this year. We saw Sony said that it now has sold 7.8 million PS5s, which is, I mean, considering how constrained Sony is, that is a really impressive number.
Yeah, that's a lie. They only made five of them.
Russell, I mean, this must not come as a shock, but like, we know how difficult it is to get a PS5. What are you hearing just in terms of like your sphere of gaming friends? Like, do most of them have a PS5 now if they wanted one?
Yeah, I mean, it took a little while. The first couple of months, it was pretty rough. There were folks, you know, being scammed and you know, things like that. But we've reached a point now where you can't, it's not easy to walk into a store and get one. But if you have decided you want one, you can have one in a couple of days. Waiting for, you know, one of the store drops to happen and then they're available. Like, there, it has become considerably easier. But we're still not at a point where they're just sitting on shelves places. And that is phenomenal. Like, it's just incredible to think about, you know, how much later it has been, especially considering this was there was no in-store launch for this system. Like, in a normal year, you know, the Best Buy down the street from me would have had 100 PlayStation 5s, and they would have, you know, people would have camped out overnight. They would have, you know, given out little number cards and said, okay, you're the 33rd person in line, you're guaranteed that you're going to get a console. And like, that would have been kind of the launch day rush. This was all done for, you know, all intents and purposes, in my area especially, it was all done online. And it was, I think as a result, a lot harder because there was never a guarantee. There was never a point where you like knew that you were getting one. And that anxiety it was new in some ways for that. I will note that people who stand in line for sneakers looked at PlayStation 5 people and laughed because they've been living that life for a long time. But it was new. And I think probably the most challenging thing that I still walk away from this whole experience was how little work the retailers did to prevent scalpers and bots.
Freaking bots.
And the reason that I say that is, you know, companies like Best Buy in particular, they don't make money on selling the console. You know, the Samsung or Sony gives them a console and they say this console is $500, and they turn around and say, hey guys, this console is $500. By the way, you can also buy a controller and a warranty and you know, the games. And they make money off of all the ancillary stuff. They don't really make much off of the console itself. So for Best Buy to be totally okay with bots just wholesale taking these things and reselling them, knowing that Best Buy gets nothing on the back end, that just seems really confusing to me. Because I know how much of, like, having been a Best Buy employee, I know how much of Best Buy's, you know, like, internal ethos is trying to encourage people to attach things to those sales. But for some reason, when it came to this sales platform, very little was done to, and continuing to be done to prevent that kind of thing, which just seems like kind of shooting yourself in the foot. And I find that very fascinating.
I really appreciated when I got my PS5, I got it from GameStop, and I'd been trying for a few weeks to find one, you know, just like kind of checking in on the different websites that would restock it every once in a while. But GameStop did this little thing a couple of months ago where they didn't really publicize it all that much, but they sent out an internal link to employees that was basically, hey, later today at 3 or 4 p.m., whatever, there's going to be an in-store only event where you can come in and you have to basically order a PS5 from an employee. Like, you can't go online and do it. And that was basically just to weed out scalpers and bots and all that stuff. So you still would have to wait for it to ship to you, but basically you're guaranteed to get one as long as you're, you know, early enough to get whatever that store has in like virtual stock.
So you could go in with like 900 Game Boy Color cartridges and trade them for a PlayStation 5.
900.
I might pay for like a third.
That number's low, Jerry.
Those are rookie numbers. You need to get those numbers up. Yeah, yes. It's really kind of fascinating the way that there's not enough that is talked about how the employee relationship when it came to getting this stuff, because it became a joke there for a while that, like, you know, everyone knew, like, that guy who worked at you know, GameStop or something, who would set one aside for a buddy and they couldn't do with that now. And there were a bunch of, you know, like things that came out, you know, where people were really upset because they heard that, you know, that a store was getting a drop and all of a sudden they didn't have any. So they were accusing the employees of kind of holding them for themselves and reselling them. Like, these companies come down pretty hard on these employees once they kind of make that decision. You know, GameStop has it a little easier than I think Best Buy does, because GameStop is frequently like just one or two people in a store at a time. And
yeah,
whether they have a security camera on is a matter of what neighborhood you're in. So it's, you know, it's a little less challenging in that situation. But yeah, some of these retailers definitely don't have it that easy.
I mean, if you're listening, there's a secret. And I know Russell backed me up, having worked for Best Buy. Suburbs, guys.
Oh, yeah.
You can wait in line in Baltimore to try to buy a PlayStation forever, or you can just drive to Frederick and have a Starbucks.
If you live in a city, get out of the city. It's it's the vaccine anomaly all over again. If you want the good stuff, go to where there are fewer people.
It's because these retailers get the same number of units for each store, even though demand is going to be super high in some places.
Funny enough, I got mine. The only place I could go was actually the GameStop that is downtown in like the middle of Indianapolis. But I think that was more just because the other stores, like I went to one right by my house, which is in the suburbs, and it was they kind of just didn't know. Like, nobody had seen the email.
Even though the console has become easier to get, accessories are still basically impossible.
Which is
really interesting. Every time I walk into the local Target, you know, by me, the PlayStation 5 section is perpetually barren. You know, if you want something, you end up having to order it online and then wait for it. And that includes some of the more expensive stuff, like the dual controller chargers and the camera, and all of that stuff, you know, is still, you know, pretty challenging to get a hold of if you just want to walk into a store and get it.
I mean, do you think that stems from what you said earlier, how all these stores are just more incentivized to actually push those products versus the console itself?
I think so, but I also don't, like, I don't see the bundle presentations that I remember seeing from previous console launches. And some of that is like kind of predatory practices that have been done away with. I worked at a Best Buy when the Xbox 360 came out, and like they made us shrink wrap the console box in with like other controllers and stuff and be like, no, the price for this thing is $450 because it comes with all this stuff. And that was total crap. You could just rip open that package and take the box up to the register and there was nothing we could do to stop you. But I don't see any of that kind of presented anywhere. It's just like the rack where all of those things are supposed to be. There's just never anything there.
Yeah.
Russell teaching people how to scam Best Buy. I love
Listen,
it.
Best Buy has gotten away with some stuff in the time that it has been a retailer. And what I will say is that over the last year, I've heard nothing but positive things about the way that it has taken care of its employees through all of the mess of the last year. But it's gotten away with some real predatory stuff over the years.
Yeah. I still can't buy one of those DualSense charging docks, which I not that I need one, but it would be nice to have. But I was able to get a PS5 day one because here in Canada, there was a lot more stock per capita, it seemed like, than in the US. And since then, we're in the same boat as everybody else. But back in October, September, when pre-orders went live, it was relatively easy actually to get one. So I feel really bad. That being said, I've been playing It Takes Two and OMFG.
Yeah.
So good. All right. Qualcomm, nothing super interesting here other than it says that the chip shortage will be largely over by the end of this year. So we have a few more months left of not being able to buy a PS5, an Xbox, a GPU, an AMD high-end chip, basically anything. Qualcomm is also saying that its own parts are recovering, but slowly, and that you may have trouble finding phones with its mid-range and lower-end devices for the next few months. OnePlus is celebrating a near 400% rise in European sales on a strong start to the OnePlus 9 series, along with the OnePlus Nord. N10 5G, which is not a good phone, but I guess a lot of people are buying it. There's also Google. So Google does not break out its hardware sales at all. We don't know how many Pixels it sells, how many Nest Hubs it sells, whatever. But we do know that YouTube is a very quickly growing business. It grew 50% revenue year over year. There, it's talking about people actually watching YouTube Shorts, which I don't believe you, .gif, but sure. Its cloud numbers were higher. It's doing fine. I think Google is, I don't know, what was it? $32 billion in the quarter, which was up nearly $7 billion over the previous year. So, sorry. No, that's ads specifically. We're talking about $55.3 billion. So, yeah.
Jesus.
A pretty significant increase in revenue there. So did Apple.
I guess they
Apple
did had fine.
Apple had its best March quarter ever with $90 billion in revenue. So...
Google, send me $5 million.
Yeah, right? I keep
you
saying,
won't miss
like,
it. Just give me some.
Man, these companies
what,
could solve homelessness in like a week
no
if they wanted
doubt.
To.
It's, you know, you got to wonder how happy and sad the people that count the beans at Google. Oh, we made $55 billion. And then they look over at the senators and the Department of Justice. They're adding up $55 billion and looking back at Google.
Yeah. Anyway. So that was that. What else do we have to talk about? Ara, you reviewed a new Qualcomm Snapdragon-powered Chromebook that was announced back in October of last year, but it's only shipping now, the Acer Chromebook Spin 513. What's all that about?
I really wanted to love this thing. I really wanted to, but... the longer I used it, and I've been rebooting this thing about once a day or once every 2 or 3 days, and I'm just consistently seeing lag whenever I get above like 6 or 7 tabs, or whenever I plug into the second monitor whenever I have a Google Meet meeting. Granted, whenever I have a second monitor and Google Meet running at the same time, I can't hold lag against it because that's just a lot for a Snapdragon 7C to be powering anyway. But... I really wanted to love this thing. This is the first Chromebook that we've seen with the Snapdragon 7C. And we've been waiting a long time for this Chromebook because it was, as I said, as Bader said, this was announced in October. We thought we were going to get this Chromebook like towards the beginning of this year. And I think retailers in Europe at one point canceled all the pre-orders. So we weren't even sure that this Chromebook was still happening, but it's finally here. And I think some other reviewers haven't seen quite as much lag as I have, but I consistently see it, and I couldn't overlook that because the $400 Chromebook range has gotten so much better over the last 2 years. Like, we have a number of Intel Core i3 Chromebooks with the exact same feature set as the Spin 513 for $400 or less. I mean, the Flex 5 is $380 right now, and that's a consistently better performance than this. So the 7C is a battery champ, but it does that because the 7C prioritizes efficiency over being, you know, beefy the way we would expect from an Intel Core. The other benefit for this is something that I couldn't test because I don't have that model, which is there's going to be an LTE version of the Acer Spin 513. So there's going to be a 4G enabled version for people who are like traveling all the time. Or the use case that I think will be better for this is, this is a good laptop for kids who are having to like learn from home or they don't have stable internet at home. This would be a good laptop for schools to buy for kids and stick a cheap 4G SIM card in it so that way the kid can have their work wherever. But for if this was going to be your only computer, this is not a great look.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would want this if you don't really like. If you don't want an LTE option, this doesn't convey that many advantages other than battery life, but i3-based Chromebooks are pretty efficient. You're getting 9, 10, 11 hours on them anyway. So if you're like a real remote user and you're actually like working from parks all day, sure. But this doesn't feel like the advantage you're getting from something like a Surface Pro X, where it's really advantageous. Like the form factor is better. You're getting considerably better battery life than an Intel equivalent. I don't understand why this exists without LTE built in.
I understand them offering up a Wi-Fi version because if you're going to build this laptop, having a Wi-Fi and an LTE version makes sense because most people are going to see the LTE and go, I don't need that because I'm not going to pay for an extra data plan. But the other thing here is, since this is the first Chromebook with the Snapdragon 7C, it's the same thing that we've seen whenever a new chipset comes to Chrome. The first device with it shows up and there's going to be bugs and they're going to get, and it's things that needs to be optimized in Chrome. There are bugs that need to be quashed. And some of these things will be fixed in 6 months. I just don't know how many of them, and I don't know how much of the lag could be from it's not optimized and how much of it is just from it's a budget-minded chip.
Well, the good thing here is once the people working on the kernel get the 7C working really well on Chrome OS, by then Qualcomm will have the 8X, 8CX, or whatever it's called, ready for Chromebooks, and that's a much better chip.
This is not the end of that conversation. It's just kind of disappointing that it feels underpowered. Kind of like the first gen Surface Pro X was too, right?
Or the first MediaTek Chromebooks. This is like Aerosmith. Yeah, this isn't anything new.
This isn't new. It's just it's something that we always see. And since we had to wait 6 months for this Chromebook, I really kind of thought that they would have ironed out more of this beforehand. Since if you were going to let it percolate for that long, I feel like you could have worked on bug hunting a little bit more. Because, I mean, I've had this for 2 weeks. It took me literally an hour to find lag on it.
That's not Acer's thing, though. Remember that Chrome is Chrome. Google is the one you have to point the finger at.
Well, Google and Qualcomm.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I want to see Google and Qualcomm work on a version of this designed for Google Assistant.
I would buy the LTE one in a heartbeat if I needed a new Chromebook. I love being able to, you know, I used to have the old first Chromebook Pixel that had LTE.
Mm-hmm.
I walk out to the workshop and not care if my Wi-Fi sucks. It was awesome.
Yeah, the LTE version of this is a compelling buy because there's just straight up, there are no good LTE Chromebooks right now unless you're going to go full enterprise. Like the only one even announced at CES was the Dell 3100, which is they took out one of the USB-A ports and stuck in an LTE modem on a two-year-old education Chromebook.
That's funny. It literally is like an old laptop card. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Dell, but seriously? You sell that many education Chromebooks and that was your LTE answer?
I think Dell cares as much about Chromebooks as it does about like mouse pads.
Yeah.
Like, it's just another accessory.
No.
It's really funny that you say that, Daniel, because if you've ever been to one of Dell's presentations where they're showing off the Chromebooks, it is spectacular how hard they work to hide the fact that it's a Chromebook. They really want you to love this laptop. Like they're just they hype up how great this laptop is. They want to show you all the really cool things about this laptop. They spent an extremely absurd amount of money creating a special matte surface on the back of their most recent generation of laptops because they finally got permission from Google to remove the multicolored Chrome logo, the ball, in exchange for a matte black one. So they had an entire engineering team create a special new surface for the back of that laptop so that they technically had the Chrome logo stamped on it, but it was so hard to see that you could you had to move it around in order to catch it in the light. Like the Dell loves selling these laptops. They hate telling people that there's Chrome on them.
And it's the opposite when you look at HP. If you've ever been to an HP briefing,
HP loves Chromebooks.
They like to tell you
more than anybody else.
Yeah. And it's because they work hard.
Yeah, no, they work hard on their Chromebooks. And I want to know where all of their new education ones are. I look like once or twice a week for the new models to show up because they were supposed to show up in April. It is April 30th. They ain't here yet.
They don't need to be here till August now. I mean, the school year is done.
No, but this is when school districts would be placing orders. Well, two months ago would be when school districts were placing orders for next year. But
maybe school districts can order them, but you can't.
That's crap. I want to play with them. I want to test them because the education Chromebooks are the ones that I can like, I can really let loose with. Let's say just throw it in the bag, doesn't need a sleeve, doesn't need a case, doesn't need anything. Just throw it in the bag and go.
I just know from my last job, what you see for sale at HP.com or in Best Buy or whatever is nothing compared to what the HP rep can show you when they walk into your office. I can almost guarantee that school districts interested in ordering new Chromebooks, HP is already there saying, hey, look at this demo.
Yeah, look, I get all that, but it's just Dell. First of all, the 3100 does not, it's looked the same for years, and it took them years to update it from the last generation. It looks, I don't know, it just looks like a piece of coal. It's not, I don't think... If they take it seriously, that's great, but it doesn't look like they do. But
I'm just waiting for that Alienware Chromebook.
Yeah.
It'll suck. It'll have green glowing, yeah.
Razer's first Chromebook is going to be sick.
If they build Chroma support into Chrome OS, that would be literally so cool. And they could do it. I mean, they're building shit in so that way they can bring the light bar back onto whatever Lenovo Chromebook is coming up with it.
Well, it's not impossible. They do it for their phones. You know, Acer and Asus, they have those gaming phones.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's always Stadia.
Yep.
There's always Stadia. All right, let's finish this up, rounding out a couple of things. So earlier this week in Eddie Q's deposition as part of the Apple v. Epic trial lawsuit, the trial is expected to start, I believe, next week. An email between Eddie Q and Hair Force One. What's his name?
Federighi.
Craig Federighi. Eddie Q admitted that it might be a good idea to bring iMessage to Android all the way back in 2013. Jerry has a really good investigative piece about what we think a world would have been like if iMessage did come to Android back in 2013. How it may have changed Facebook's fortunes, and it's really about Facebook. You know, iMessage is very, very popular, specifically in North America, and WhatsApp is a very popular messaging app across the world, and Facebook Messenger is more focused in the U.S. But what would have happened if iMessage had tried to interrupt that and gotten onto more people's Android phones in the earlier part of the decade? Would that have made a big difference? I think it would have. I also think it may have affected Google's messaging strategy, right? Would Google Allo have even been introduced in 2016 if iMessage had existed? I have no idea.
Yeah, Google has spent years trying to copy iMessage. If iMessage was there, that's just a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting when you dig into the numbers and watch WhatsApp growth and compare that to Android growth, they match.
Mm-hmm.
When Android hit 2 billion users, WhatsApp hit 2 billion users.
I think it is fascinating. The one piece of that, you know, kind of email that got sent out that really kind of stuck with me was the conversation about, it was just like, well, how do we monetize it? And it is so crazy to me that the conversation about how to monetize the app on Android versus existing as this like sales pitch to get people to switch from Android to iPhone was a thing that existed. There are so many different opportunities to monetize iMessage on Android devices. Every single like extra feature that exists on the iPhone, like you go into iMessage, there's so many different features that you can access. You could have easily made it so that developers could charge for that on Android.
Yeah.
How many people over the years have said that they would pay like a monthly subscription use iMessage on Android?
Yeah. Subscription. Like if you want iMessage on your Android phone, you have to pay for an iCloud account. Like that would have worked.
I think the real meat of the issue was Federighi's response that if you put iMessage on Android, you remove a barrier for sales.
Yep. Yep.
And he's right because he specifically said children. If your kids really have to have iMessage, we've all seen the videos where the 10-year-old kid gets an iPhone for their birthday and how they go crazy. Imagine if you could just buy them a $200 Android phone and they could still have iMessage to talk to their friends. That's what every parent would have done. if I give my kids an $800 iPhone and they break it, I'm going to be pissed. If I give them a $200 Android phone and they break it, I'm going to be less pissed because it's easier to replace. And I think that Federighi was really smart to see that, because this would have just, I mean, it literally would have affected Apple's market share a lot in the U.S. and Canada.
I don't think so. Under that outgoing exterior, the guy is just kind of here to sell you an iPhone.
Yeah, no way. Fancy that.
No way.
You mean to tell me that that whole Apple presentation is scripted and staged, and that's not actually what those people are like in real life? I am offended.
He seems so nice in the marketing videos that Apple puts on its YouTube channel.
But Daniel, you said you don't think that that would have changed market share?
No, I don't. I don't think it would have negatively affected Apple's market share at all. In fact,
I do.
Think about the iPhone was not under $700 until 2016, when the first iPhone SE launched, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even now, even with lower average sales prices of iPhones, because the SE and the Mini are cheaper, this is still a premium device, right? And the families that would have bought their kids an iPhone likely would have continued to buy them an iPhone, because back then, even, right, if we're talking about Google taking conversation seriously and making it a great cross-app unified messaging experience, that only happened last year, really, with Android 11. Back in 2013, 2014, using iMessage on an Android phone would have been like using WhatsApp, would have been like using any other separated, clunky messaging app.
Except your friends wouldn't laugh at you.
Right, but the thing is, like, they would, okay, fair. You would see the blue bubble. So it would have affected things a little bit. But ultimately, I do believe that if you were slated to get an iPhone, if you begged your parents for an iPhone, it is because of iMessage to some extent, but it's also the iPhone itself as that status symbol. And I don't think people running around back in 2013, 2014 with like a cheapy Samsung Galaxy or, you know, Galaxy J or whatever they were offering back then, I just don't think that would have been enough. I think they would have wanted those iPhones. So it might have affected it a little bit in the short term, but ultimately it would have evened itself out. And I think Apple could have done themselves a pretty big service by acknowledging exactly what Russell just said, that if you have an iCloud subscription elsewhere, you then get access to iMessage on Android for free, right? That keeps you in the Apple ecosystem even without an iPhone.
Exactly. And also allows for potential competition when it comes to things like photo backup. You know, it could have synced over music that you had, you know, personally stored so that it would keep you in the iTunes ecosystem. Like, there was a lot of opportunity there. And I think the real story is that back in 2014, Apple was still very bad at services.
So bad. Oh my God. iCloud back then was terrible.
Yeah, but Apple today, Apple today is much, much better at services and could make that and monetize it on Android very, very well.
Yes, Apple was bad at services back then, except for iMessage. You have to remember, in 2013, iMessage was amazing.
Sure, and it still
now,
is.
Now, not so much. It's good, no, but
it does a ton of stuff now. Like, it is its own effective platform.
I guess I don't care about all the other things it does, so maybe I see it differently. I'm worried about good communication that's safe. And, you know, now you can get that a lot of other ways, but in 2013, you couldn't. There was iMessage.
I also think, outside of just trying to help push iPhones, you know, iMessage on Android would have helped push more Macs and more iPads, because you can
use
iMessage
across
on your other devices. Yeah. And, like, that's just not a thing you can do on Windows or
unless you could put iMessage on your Android tablet.
You could, I suppose, if they did that, but it still wouldn't work on your Windows laptop. And that could be a great argument to buy a Mac.
Yeah, I guess when did iMessage in the cloud debut? That was later on. That was like 2018.
I think it was 17 or 18, yeah.
Right. So it probably would have been difficult to build the infrastructure too back then. Right, because it would have been on a different rail if it was on Android.
This was an iPhone only thing at first, and that would have required a lot of work to make it a cloud based service. But I do believe Apple was capable of doing that work if they wanted to.
Well, yeah, I think that goes back to the company just not being great at services in 2014.
Yeah, you're right. I would love to see like a surprise announcement at WWDC this year. Like, oh, by the way, if you're an iCloud One or what's it called? Apple One Premier subscriber, you get this little thing called iMessage for Android. I think that would be amazing.
We'd have to check on Zuckerberg and make sure he's not got a broken chair.
His head didn't explode.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll leave the conversation with the image of Zuckerberg's head exploding and go into what's making us happy this week, which ironically is not the idea of Zuckerberg's head exploding. So we'll start with Jerry, because we'll leave the guys for last. So I'll be crying over here in the corner.
What's making me happy is I'm finally rid of Russell and Hayato. They're I don't have to deal with them anymore.
There no,
I deserve that.
I'm just kidding. They both know I love them a lot. But what's really making me happy is I've got another crazy ass Chinese gaming phone to review. And God, these things are insane. If you are a gadget nerd, I swear to God, this thing, it has, I can adjust the fan speed and there's six different LEDs and I can have the screen at 60 Hertz, 90 Hertz, 120 Hertz or 145 Hertz. And of course, a lot of it's broken, but it's still there as an option. And this, I just love this kind of stuff. It's, you know, I tell you my first impressions, I wouldn't want to use this phone every day, but if I wanted to play serious games on Android, this is the phone to do it with, man. This is pretty cool. And it's the Red Magic 6 Pro. And a lot of people looked at it when it first came out and it was really, really buggy. I took it out of the box and got a software update and many of those bugs were addressed. So if you've already read a review on it and said, oh man, so many bugs, look out because there's a lot less bugs. There's still a lot, but a lot less.
Well, that's a pretty good one. I'm really excited to read your review for that. It's going to be hilarious.
You know how much I love this kind of stuff, man.
I do. I can hear it. All right, Ara, what's making you happy this week?
Comic books and superheroes, because today was the season finale of Invincible, and it was so hard to watch, but it was good. I'm really excited for next season, and then tomorrow is Free Comic Book Day, so I'm going to get to go strawberry picking in the morning, and then I'm going to head over to Gods and Monsters and pick up some free comic books, and then buy some other comic books and probably a couple of manga.
That sounds like fun. Enjoy it.
Yes.
All right, Hayato, I guess the cat is out of the bag now, but you got to tell us a little bit more about what you're going to be doing now that it's your last day here. And we've been teasing this for basically months now, because I've known.
Yeah, we've known for a while.
I've known since January. So you dropped this on me 4 months ago, and I've just had to keep this to myself until it went public, which is really hard.
And it still stings even 4 months later.
It damn well should. Yeah, tell us what you're going to be doing.
Today's my last day at Android Central. In about 2 weeks, I am going to be starting with MKBHD, and I'll be joining some of my good friends like David Amell and Adam Molina. We'll be basically launching at least one new YouTube channel. I guess sort of starting like an MKBHD network of some kind. To my knowledge, what I'm going to be doing is mostly behind the scenes content. I'm going to be, you know, kind of making videos on how we make videos for the main channel and all sorts of things like that. So it's going to be a very new experience. You know, I mean, I haven't worked in a physical setting with other people in a long time. And this is really, you know, kind of a bucket list job, I feel like. And it's something that lets me focus a bit more on video and just the sort of production aspect that I'm quite passionate about. You know, not that this job hasn't, but it's kind of going to be like the sole focus of this one, and it's going to be a good time, I think.
Your first video: how to set up a microphone so it doesn't sound like you're in the damn Grand Canyon.
Yeah, this is I think this came with the Galaxy S9. It's those inline earbuds. So,
I mean, for that, you sound pretty good, I think. I'm pretty surprised. Well, good luck. I mean, God, it'll be weird not having you here, but you've had a really good run. It was four years, right?
I think three. I started in November 2017.
So
three and a half
years.
Damn, wow. 17 more years and you could have got that gold watch.
gold Apple Watch.
Yeah.
The first gen one.
Well, I know I'm going to watch all your videos just so I can dislike them and call you, you know,
please do,
names in the comments. You know, you need to look.
Because I can't wait till Jerry is the first person you ban from the new channel.
No, I can't wait because, you know, I'm still getting comments in all of the Android Central videos I make that are like, you know, who's this new guy? Get this guy out of here. He's not Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's going to be the same thing. I'm excited.
We'll bring back Joe because everybody thinks he looks like Ace Ventura.
Right.
R.I.P.
I miss Joe.
Oh, man. So many people. All right, Russell. What are you doing? What are you going to be doing over at one of our biggest competitors, you son of a bitch?
Yeah, so I'm joining the Red Ventures team to be a managing editor for CNET. So I'm going to be just all kinds of stuff. The plan is for me to be in a ton of different places, really just kind of organizing the stuff that they're doing and you know, figuring out new ways to do it. I'm hoping that I'm going to have plenty of time to write. And possibly some time to do some fun video stuff with some of our CNET colleagues that I have admired from afar for a very long time. But we'll see what happens.
Well, you're going to do great.
Well, the first thing you got to do is fix it so them videos don't start automatically whenever I go to CNET. That's it, job one.
It is,
man.
Amazing the laundry list of things that I have from people who are like, hey, when you go to CNET, can you make them stop doing this? I'm just like, would you like me to just build you a new website? Is that what you're asking for?
Sure. Whoa, a spam call. Isn't that awesome? Thank you, Samsung. You told me it was spam. Why didn't you let it ring? God, this is so stupid.
Your phone,
I hate this
you
phone.
Podcast, bro?
No, I don't mute the ringer on my phone ever. What if somebody important wants to call?
Oh, man, my next 2 weeks before I start the new job, that's all I'm doing is leaving my phone on mute.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I've got old parents and grandkids. If one of my grandkids would call during this podcast, I'd just click the thin damn thing off and tell you all goodbye.
Fair enough.
I love those little kids. They're way better than you guys.
Fair.
But really quickly, thing that made me happy this week that's separate from the new gig. If you are the kind of person to go and look up photos of people being genuinely happy because the world is starting to ever so slightly lean back towards normal, Disneyland opened today.
Yes!
And the photos of people being in the park for the first time and people sharing their experiences for being in the park the first time. That park has been closed for over 400 days. And so for it to be open today for the first time to people who live in California, there are a lot of really happy people. And it's like just scrolling through Twitter right now. It's been really nice to see people just kind of genuinely enjoying being outside.
And the hospitals in Alameda are, you know, stocking up on oxygen and ventilators.
California has been better about getting people vaccinated.
California's also been below 1% for quite a while now.
I was just making a joke, guys.
Yeah, God. Well, COVID rates are on the rise here in Florida again.
That's because
thankfully
Florida.
I've got my 5G vaccine, so.
I mean, I'm from Florida. You can't hide that from me. I know why. It's
I know why too, Jerry. I'm not happy
I know.
About it.
You're among them.
I think, I'm excited for people to get back out in the real world. I'm excited to see what you're going to do over there at CNET. Look, it's always bittersweet because I'm really proud of the people who work here and then move on to do bigger and better things. I mean, we've had so many people. Andrew is now editor in chief of Digital Trends. Like, that's incredible. Joe is running his own section over at Screen Rant.
I don't even remember those guys.
Hayato, you're gonna kill it over there. I'm gonna be earnest for a minute because that's the way I like to end these shows. But I'm really just so happy that you've been a part of this team for 3.5 years. It's been so cool watching you become a better writer, a better videographer and video producer, a better photographer, and a slightly worse pizza lover, because I learned that you like pepper, you like pineapple, but that's fine.
Oh, man.
That's okay. That's the legacy you want to leave? Whatever. Sure.
Hayato, give me a month. I'm going to come up to New York and we'll grab a pineapple slice together.
That sounds beautiful.
Middle
Russell,
of
we'll
beginning
do that.
Of the first week of June, I'll be up there.
Perfect. That's the first week is my birthday week. Let's do
Solid.
It.
And yeah, Russell, like, man, I've worked with you almost every day since I got here in 2016. And
I'm sorry.
It's been an interesting ride.
Tremendous pain in your ass. It's okay to say.
You can say that again. No, it's been amazing. You are one of the best big thinkers I've ever worked with. And I've learned so much from you. So thank you.
I know I was so happy when we hired Russell, because that meant I'm not the only asshole with a big mouth that works for this company. And it was awesome to have somebody back me up sometimes. Russell, thanks.
I will never, ever forget the second week that I was here. Someone in the comments said something and I responded back to them and they emailed Phil and they were like, how could you let somebody talk like this to your readers? And Phil responded and CC'd everyone. And he just said one sentence. Why do you think we hired him?
Yep.
It was pretty great.
All right. Well, on that note, you two are what's making me happy this week. We will end it there. If you want to hear more from these guys, they will be all over the internet very soon in their respective places. You can find Russell at Russell Holly. You can find Hayato at Hayato Huseman. You can find Ara at Ara Wagco. You can find Jerry at GB Hill, trying to just pound the reject button on his Galaxy S21.
Well, I turned it upside down and it didn't shut off this time.
You can find me at Dirty Dan. You can find all of us, well, most of us, three of us anyway, at Android Aww. Central. We will talk to you again next week. All right. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
One final yeet for the road.